What if you were born with a disease that you always knew would kill you? And then what if all of a sudden you were given a second chance? Well, that's exactly what happened to me. And it's the question that we explore on the new podcast series, Breathless, from Snack Labs. Join me, Jeremy Saunders, for a series that explores what it means to live and die, to love and to lose, and what it's like to have your whole life turned upside down and the unexpected challenges that come with a life-saving drug. You can listen to Breathless now, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Kathleen, when we first invented the idea for this podcast,
yes,
and we put up, we put together a dream guest list. Oh, you were on it.
Oh, was
you
I?
You were one of mine. Yeah.
You
oh,
and
I am so flattered.
You and Maria from last night.
Yeah.
And we're banging them out.
Yeah.
We're just checking them off this trip.
Yeah, it's a good checklist. I just remember working with you, like it must have been 15 years ago or.
When we did Solo Works?
Yeah.
Yes. It would have been 15 years ago.
And I remember just being totally in awe of your sensuality and self-expression. And I was like, that's a perfect combination to get in here and talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sensuality. I think that's a good word.
It's such a good word.
I feel like I'm meeting you for the first time tonight, Kathleen.
Yes.
But I've seen you before.
Right.
Performing. We were talking about it earlier. And remind me, what was the show that I saw?
Something about the Attic, Three Girls, and...
The Attic, The Pearls, and three Fine Girls.
Yeah,
yes.
That's
Fine Girls,
right.
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you were the, like, sensual sister.
I was the sensual lesbian sister.
That's right, yeah.
Came out of the closet during the during the play.
Yes. I remember that performance. I remember it well. And so before we get too deep
into
this.
Oh, and Vagina Monologues. Did we do
yes,
Vagina Monologues together?
Yes, right. We did Vagina Monologues together.
No wonder you're on the list. The list of dream guests. So, Kathleen, I'm holding your book right now. You wrote this book. It's called Sex After Baby, Why There Is None.
Yes.
So you're an author, you're an actress, you are...
A writer.
A workshop leader.
Workshop leader.
Yes.
Does most of the work that you touch on in terms of like artistic expression dive into sexuality, or has it always sort of floated around this realm of sexuality?
Certainly at first it did. And I'm just trying to think about, I mean, it always includes sexuality. And I think that, I mean, first of all, I just want to commend the two of you for what you're doing, because part of my motivation, I suppose, part of my inspiration, what inspires me in my work is to create honesty, to at least move toward truth. And I think that we live in a society that to a great extent rewards silence and pretense.
Right.
And so with our work as artists, we're always wanting to find truth and express truth, whether it's through our characters, whether it's through writing. And sexuality, sex is one of those arenas that unfortunately is kind of cloaked in secrecy, shame, silence.
It's taboo.
Yeah, exactly. And or it's being like commoditized and packaged up for sale, and there's not any real truth or honesty in it. It's not it's not what real people do, and it's not how we live, and it's not how we experience things.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you're doing this podcast and actually having conversations about sex with real people and opening that conversation and creating that invitation, and that makes it possible for, like, people listen to your podcast and your conversation about sex, and that makes it possible for them to perhaps reflect more honestly about their own experience and perhaps take a little risk and initiate a conversation of their own. And I mean, to me, that's so worthwhile, so meaningful.
It's pretty crazy how many people, like, since we've started this, and whatever, we're like, I don't know, up to this point, like maybe 50 episodes in. So 50 hours of content, we'll say, give or take.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that have reached out and said, you have no idea how much of an effect this has had on mine and my partner's, like, sexual relationship or sexual communication or, you know, whatever. It's so interesting. And it I mean, like, it makes sense, right?
It makes so much sense. And what's just coming back to me is my first boyfriend and I, the person I lost my virginity to, we bought a little book about sex.
Yeah.
And the most we actually probably communicated about sex was reading the pages of this book to each other.
Right.
And it was a facilitator.
It was a facilitator, a catalyst. It made it safe for you to have a discussion about at least what was presented to you in that book, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Have you ever gotten feedback like that about the work that you've done, whether it be
acting
work or the writing work?
Yeah. I bet this book is a big one.
Yeah.
Just reading the intro, the first few lines of a few of the pages, I was like, I got to dive into this.
That was one of the most gratifying things about publishing that book, because so many women reached out to me and said, wow, I feel seen. I feel heard. And not that I, in my experience, speak for anyone else, but what I do is say, you know, we're all individuals. We all have our own history. We all have our own experience. We have our own preferences. We have our own temperaments. And so no one individual's experience is the same as another's. And we need to make lots of room for that.
So again, sex after baby, why there is none.
Yeah, so what happened to me was that...
yeah.
Well,
I'm reading the back here, and it's like, I love this little piece here where it says, a sex goddess searches to get her groove back. After she had a baby at 39, Kathleen Hamilton's sexual desire dove overnight from, honey, can we please have sex tonight? I've got a headache. I love that.
Yeah, me
too. To nothing. Zero, zip, nada. It was an identity crisis. Just a 29-year-old boy who knows not much about anything. Is that a common thing of women losing their libido after pregnancy?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It's not across the board by any means, but it is common.
But it's not, it's not something that's like, what the fuck? This is out of the blue.
It was out of the blue for me you. Because, like we were just talking about, this was not this is not common knowledge. It's not something that women were talking about. And it's not something, even though when I went around and asked the questions, I actually found out that it was very common. And but again, it just wasn't part of the conversation.
Which is so funny because the amount of times...
It pissed me off.
The amount of times I've heard that said, whether it be through my own normal, just like eavesdropping over conversations women having about pregnancy or through Sick Boy or through even this podcast here, of women who say, specifically about pregnancy...
Right.
No one told me this was going to be a thing.
Yes.
No one told me this was how it was going to be.
Right.
Like, there's this whole fucking, like, underbelly of information, this, like, world that exists that no one talks about. Especially, I mean, not to, like, sidetrack it too much, but, like, when we were talking about miscarriages on Sick Boy, like, that was a whole thing that just people would never talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I wonder if that's because it's, like...
there's shame attached to it.
Sure. And also everyone's experience is so different. And like, even with my medical stuff with like BV and yeast infections, the person I talk to about that is my doctor. And my doctor's like, yeah, I don't know.
Right. Doctors know so little. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can...
book can only tell you so much. Like, that's the way I look at a doctor is like a doctor takes most of what they've learned from study. From a book, right? But we are very complex machines. There's, I mean, how many people have you met in your life where they've said something to the effect of, yeah, this thing happened to me, and like, I'm in some medical journal somewhere because I had this thing happen, and the doctors were like, that's fucking crazy. Maybe I've heard more people say that than your average person, but I feel like I've heard a lot of people say that.
Yeah, you're a sick boy.
So tell us about that experience about losing your, you know, without giving too much of the book away. Go
sure. Well, the book has been out for 10 years now. It just celebrated its 10th anniversary, so we're not giving away any secrets. But what happened with me is, you know, during my whole pregnancy, my sexual desire, my sex drive actually, you know, like was up through the roof. I was like Aphrodite. I was just like the goddess of fertility.
While you were pregnant?
While I was pregnant, yes. Okay. And I thoroughly enjoyed my pregnancy for many reasons, but that being among them. And certainly, like you were saying, that's not the experience of every woman. There's quite a spectrum of experience there. But then after the birth, I had no sexual desire whatsoever.
Had you ever gone through dips in your libido before where you're like, what happened? Where did it go? And then it comes back and you're like, oh, I guess that's just a cycle.
No, I did have, the cycle that I would have is at ovulation, right? Then, you know, my sex drive would be really, really, really high, right? But it would never disappear.
Right.
And so, I knew that I would be tired. I knew that, you know, opportunities would be less. I knew that, you know, there would be lifestyle changes. But I did not think that I was not aware that there would be an actual hormonal physiological change that would cause my desire to actually vanish.
Just dissipate.
Kind of like, right? Imagine if you were a foodie and a lot of your life was about food and cooking and eating in restaurants and loving food and exploring different flavors and different cultures and food and la la la, you just love food and all expressions and aspects of it, and then suddenly you have no appetite. Like no appetite.
Sounds like depression.
Yeah. I guess it could be like that. I've heard people say that when they were depressed, they lost their appetite. And
or their libido. I think that's right. Also a common thing.
Or
yeah.
Interest in the things
that you like, that you love. Enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It could be. I mean, I didn't feel depressed.
You just didn't feel horny.
No.
Yeah.
And it was like a loss of pleasure at a time when I would have preferred to have kept pleasure in my life, right? I would have, like, you know, because parenting is difficult, there's all of these challenges that get added in, and then certain things in your life, you kind of like, if they're not priorities, you let them go. So you want to keep whatever pleasure you have, right?
Does this include self-love? Like, does this include masturbation and like getting yourself off? Like,
no, I mean, no desire. No.
At all.
No.
Nothing at
like,
all.
Like, not a little tingle.
Huh.
Although one time it was really funny because I went to baby club, and this was when it was about 3 months after the birth, and I was at baby club and I brought up the topic. So normally at baby club, you talk about babies and their baby issues. But so I brought up the topic about like, well, what about sex after baby? Like, you know, and one of the women said, oh, there is none. And I said, no, come on. Because seriously, I said, I don't have any desire. And she said, yeah, that's the way it is. And I said, no, no, it's not. Don't say that to me. And she said, well, at least until after you stop nursing. And I was like, oh my God, I just can't believe this. I can't believe I've done this to myself. So then it was so funny because after baby club was over and we were getting our boots on and heading out, her husband came over to me and he said, look, I've got this. I know what you can do. I know what you can do to help yourself. He said, there's this spot down by your ankle. You just need to kind of rub it. And he pulled off his boot and he was like showing me this spot on my ankle to rub. And
that's
it was,
all there is to it.
And it was funny because while I was rubbing that spot that he showed me, I actually did feel a little bit of tingle, like where I would want to feel a tingle.
Yeah.
And but it was only while I was rubbing it. That was the end of it. But
was he like an acupressure or something?
Yeah, it was something like that.
He's a construction worker. He's just very in tune. Yeah.
He just had a foot fetish. He just wanted you to put your shoes on your feet.
Oh my God. So, again, silly boy question, but how long does a woman generally nurse for?
Oh, that really
on
varies.
Average. It varies like crazy.
Oh yeah, it's a personal choice thing.
Okay, sure.
But at the time, nursing.
At the time, you were like, "I'm done nursing now."
Yeah.
Then,
yeah. Well, I had already made a commitment to nurse as long as possible because I was very indoctrinated into the LaLeche League teachings and the whole World Health Organization saying that you should breastfeed your baby for as long as possible.
Yeah, because it's important, right?
Well, all of those nutrients your babies are going to grow up and be smarter and healthier and all these things. So it feels like tantamount to child abuse practically It's you got to slink around if you're feeding your baby with a bottle, right? Like,
yeah, right.
That's fair too, because I have some women friends who have had babies and for whatever reason couldn't breastfeed.
I know.
It comes with a huge amount of embarrassment and shame.
I know. It's hard for them to stand up with that.
Yeah. I met someone who donates her breast milk.
Oh, that's a thing too. Yeah. Like a wet nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. But it's like, there's like some legality issues around it.
Sure.
There's a whole thing.
Sure.
It's a little...
There's not
a little,
regulated.
A little under the table.
Yeah. It's a black market breast milk.
That's right.
Turn Me On. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So what was the catalyst to, well, I'm assuming your drive for sex came back.
Yeah, so what I did was, I mean, it was a hard go, and I started having conversations with other women, and those interviews form part of the book, and then just sort of my journey of coming to terms with, you know, who am I without, you know, if I'm not, because I always just felt like sex was one of the things I really had going for mm-hmm. me, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was always worked really, really well for me. And then, you know, to just have it just like gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just poof, it's disappear.
Like, again, like you said in the back of the book there, like you're losing, it was an identity crisis.
It was an identity crisis. Yeah. Yes. And, the thing for me is that I didn't want to have sex without desire.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I refused to do that because for me, sex is supposed to be sexy. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it, it wasn't something that I was just going to do out of a sense of duty or anything like that. Like for me, sex has to feel good. So then it created this whole situation, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And luckily...
Was it tough for you and your partner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Had you guys been together for a long time?
We had.
Yeah.
Luckily.
So, exactly. I imagine that played a super important role in how you guys came through to the
It
other side.
Did, but I would say... It was like, even though we had been together for a long time, it still was very challenging because, I don't know, there's something about sharing sexual pleasure with a partner that tends to sort of like take the edge off a lot of other relationship issues or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a way that you come that you bond with each other.
Yeah, it's a source of therapy almost.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And so there was a lot of growth there. There was a lot of charting new territory. And I am happy to say that interestingly enough, when I did stop breastfeeding when my son was about 2.5 years old, presto, miracle.
Just came back.
It just came back.
What?
Yeah.
So that lady was right.
She was. And I did not believe her. But she was the only person who told me that.
I thought she was just talking smack. She knew.
No, she was, that had been her experience too.
So
it was her experience. Okay. Uh-huh.
My thought on that is, you know, if someone is on your body and their survival depends on your body, mm-hmm. that might make you feel less inclined to also give more with your body.
Yeah, you're already expending so much self energy on this one human that you've lost the desire to like give it over to somebody else and receive from somebody else because you are giving and receiving already.
That would be a conclusion that I would draw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is definitely at play. Like I didn't feel very, you know, like huggy or snuggly or anything. That's for sure. I didn't have that kind of like skin hunger, but I also did not have sexual desire.
Mm-hmm.
See, those are two different things to me.
Talk about that.
And I just didn't, well, you know, like the yoni sensations of like, oh yeah, I want it. I need it. Like, you know, and give it, give it to me without much of the snuggling and kissing. Yeah. Let's just do it, right?
There's no, I didn't even have that. I'm wet and I just need someone to hold me.
That's right.
Like those are two very different things.
Right. They are. I mean, sometimes we combine them, but they are different.
Yeah.
And
I feel that. I get that sometimes. Yeah. Like there's times where I'm just like, I just want to snuggle. I just want to snuggle up. And then there's times where I'm like,
yeah,
I just want to have a quickie in the kitchen and then get the fuck out.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's like a strong desire, a need, a physical. It's kind of like being hungry, you know?
It's primal.
Right. Exactly. It's very physical, biological. And I do think that hormones kind of rule.
Right.
And and we think that we're making all of these choices and that it's about what our preferences are and everything. But I don't know. I think a lot of it is just kind of wired into the...
Did you get any sort of understanding about what it was exactly hormonally that was happening?
Yeah, like on a scientific sort of
right. Let me level. Think if I can remember that or not.
Is it nothing, in the book?
Yeah, I think it might be. Yeah. I think it might be. Nothing like very specific is coming to mind, but there are nursing hormones. And the thing is too, like if you think about it from a biological standpoint, a nursing mother physiologically, like the nursing mother's body does not want to become pregnant again because she's still nursing a child, right? So if I feel sexual desire, then I'm going to have sex and then the chances of me becoming pregnant are, you know...
higher.
Yeah, than if I don't. So if I don't have desire, then, you know...
No problem.
So anyways, I think that does have something to do with it.
That makes sense.
I just found that it was really shocking to me that... that I wasn't forewarned about this, that this is something that could happen, you know? Yeah. And also, I mean, I was older too. I was 39. So, you know, like maybe I was going to have less of those hormones to begin with.
Right.
Because of my age. I don't know. But I just know that, when I talk to other women, they were very, very eager to have the conversation. Wanted to have a conversation. And so regardless of what the individual experience is, I think that it's just really important that we do have these conversations, that we do talk about sex, sexual pleasure, sensuality, what our experiences have been, what our fears are, what our, you know, fantasies are, what it really, really is for us. I just think that we should all... do more of that. And I think that the more safety is built in around it, the more that we normalize a wide spectrum of experience, the better we're off we're all going to be.
And I'm sure that there are positive hormonal or chemical changes in your body from those kinds of conversations that are like, I'm connecting. This is making me feel seen. Like you said, people said with the book, like those conversations that I've had with people on these microphones, sometimes I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that I've been holding on to this thing until you said that. And then I realized that, like,
right.
I'm not so different than everyone.
That's right. I know there's just something, there's a something that happens when we don't talk about our personal things, like, and this applies to sex, it applies to spirituality, it applies to money, you know, all these things that have a profound effect on our lives that we keep quiet about or pretend a certain common reality is true for us when it isn't. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know. I think for the evolution of the species, truth is important. Like we can't really evolve as human beings and grow if we don't tell the truth. And so the extent to which we tell the truth about our experience, whether it's about an illness, whether it's a woundedness that we have, an insecurity that we have, something that we think is unusual about us, something that probably isn't that unusual.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it helps us to connect and feel our humanity.
Mm. When your sexuality came back, did it come back with a vengeance, or was it like it just came back to normal? You know, like, were you trying to make up for lost time?
I was pretty relieved to have it come back. I likened it to, like, have you ever had a cat and your cat disappears? And right. you're like, wow,
and
you know.
Like, what and the fuck? Where have you been?
Yes. And you look for the cat for a couple of months and then you're like, oh, well.
I guess he's dead.
You know, maybe the coyotes got
him. It had
him,
a good life.
or is just living happily somewhere else and just never going to see him again. And the cat comes back and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
So hey, happy. Everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Come look at my cat.
My pussy's back.
Oh, dear. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
So how does this all play a role within your writing now? Like, you know, you write this book, but we were talking earlier before we started recording about this workshop that you run called Delta
of Venus.
Of Venus.
Yeah, Delta of Venus is named after a book of erotica written by Anais Nin.
Oh, wow.
She's like the mother of erotic writing.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
I'm a big fan of hers. I made her one of the characters in my first play, Shameless Hussies.
Okay.
Along with Mae West. And the movie star Mae West.
Yeah, there's we got a lot of Mae West on her Instagram. Yeah, account.
We quote
a lot of Mae West. Oh yeah, exactly. She's so funny. Yeah. I love her. I used to be Snow White, but I drifted.
Delta of Venus. Is
Delta
that
of Venus.
Delta of Venus.
Yes.
And what is the what? So it's a workshop to...
Right, it's a workshop to where writers can come and try their hand at erotic writing.
Tell me about erotic writing, because I don't think I've ever read an erotic novel. Okay. I don't think. Have I ever read an erotic novel?
We bought one from Venus Envy one time. It's called Dirty Girls, and I have it, and it's
but
like
you read
a collection. I've read it, but I feel like I've read it out loud.
Maybe you read it out loud once to me. Yeah.
I've tried my hand at it, too. I just have it locked away on my computer.
The only thing I've ever done was it typing out a huge
sexting.
Oh, yeah. But like not just sexting. I'm talking like...
A scenario.
A fucking...
A skit.
Oh, yeah.
Well-written out scenario.
Yeah.
That is very in-depth and very long. It gives me carpal tunnel in my thumbs. Because I've been typing on my phone so much about it.
Yeah. Well, that would be a form of it. And if you just, you know, published it or shared it, I guess, online, that would be a form of publishing erotic writing. Well, it's any writing that is designed to... potentially, at least, turn on the reader.
Mm-hmm. So it's like written porn.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yes. So within that, there's a spectrum, you know, of literary... what are we going to say?
I want to say, like... I was going to say, like, prowess.
Prowess, but, yes.
I think...
Yes.
Like 50 Shades of Grey is not a very well written.
That's right.
But a lot of people found it erotic literature.
Right.
Right.
But then you have Anais Nin, and I'm sure that she's a much more masterful with language.
That's right. Yeah.
And it from my experience of reading erotic literature, it's like pacing is really important and drawing someone in. You can't just be like, wake up on page one and
we're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So there can be a story, there can be characters, and there can be dialogue, and, you know, it can incorporate literary elements. Mm. And, but like you said, it's all to taste, right?
Sure.
Not just the content, but the style of writing.
Yeah.
And so just writing with a strong sexual theme, and again, designed to potentially at least
there's like
turn on the reader.
There's like literary foreplay.
Yes.
Right.
Then,
yeah. Okay, so
maybe a denouement.
Then let me ask you this.
Right.
Your if you were to sit and think about your favorite erotic novel.
Right.
What percentage of that novel is like the goods? You know, like what percentage of that novel is the hot and heavy, very explicit sex
right.
talk?
Yeah.
And then what percentage is like...
the setup?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, or like, what's the word? Exposition? Mm. Is that the word? Would that be the word there?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Like my personal
preference? Yeah, yeah. Your own, like your favorite erotic novel.
Okay.
I feel like I gotta read up on my erotica.
Right.
I feel like I dig it.
Yeah, you probably do. Yeah. If you wrote it, yeah, I would say you definitely do. You're very drawn to it.
Yeah.
And because that, you know, reading those words engages your imagination. Yeah. And you obviously probably wanted who was reading it to engage their imagination too.
Probably.
Precisely.
And then want to enact this. Like you're like, oh yeah, let's make this come real. Yeah, well, for me, I'm not like crazy about all the, you know, I do want a believable story and characters. Like I want at least one character that I'm following that I'm going to relate to her somehow.
Sure.
Right? I need that. But in the hands of a good writer, you know, so I'm going to say 30-70.
Okay.
For me.
30 being the hot and heavy, and
no,
70
70
is the hot and heavy.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Whoa. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All
That's
right.
what I would say for myself.
Oh, fuck yeah. I'm
but
on
I
board.
Was, but I was, but okay, I'll tell you what. Like, this is how I'm wired, because my first book that I read about sex was do you remember Zaviera Hollander? Well, you wouldn't remember, but are you aware of her?
I don't know. What did
she wrote the Happy Hooker Hollander. Books.
Oh,
and
it was
supposedly memoir, and I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look her up to find out, but these were really, really, really raunchy novels or memoirs by this, she was called the Happy Hooker. And that's what I read when I was like 13 babysitting, right?
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. And it was, real sex was kind of disappointing to me after that.
Oh, my God.
For a while until I could, you know, like train guys up to.
Right. Get them up to your speed.
Get them up to my speed, exactly. I know, but yeah, so... And then I can remember too, like reading books and, you know, like Harlequin romances and books that I knew were going to have sex in them, and just kind of like flipping through the pages until I got to the sexy parts.
You're looking for body parts, like like words on the page.
Are Harlequin novels a type of erotica?
They're like soft erotica, I would say. You buy them in like the drugstore.
Yeah,
like
I see them. I see them around. Our friend was on the cover of one.
Yeah, yeah. Once. We have a model and actress friend who's on the cover of one.
Well, I think there's a whole branch of Harlequin romances now that are pretty sexy, pretty racy.
I guess you have to go there.
Yeah.
Now you have to offer that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of you know, most of what I read is like falls within sci-fi or like dystopian, apocalyptic, kind of just dark and like weird, creepy shit.
Yeah.
Not a lot of erotica.
Right.
But I've seen, I watch a lot of movies, and you know, I'm not steering towards pornography movies, but like actual film that it could be consumed by the general public, you know, like in the theater. Yeah. And for some reason, when we're talking about like erotic writing, I can't help but think about this movie that Richard Gere was in, like.
Years ago?
Yeah,
it was called 9 and a half weeks.
Unfaithful? No.
Oh, Unfaithful.
With it was Richard Gere.
It wasn't that many years ago.
And Diane Lane. It was like 2002.
Early 2002. Yeah.
Oh.
And this guy, Oliver Martinez, and like she, Richard Gere Diane Lane are married, and she sees this like sexy, like Spanish guy, and and like they just lost their daughter or something, and
she needs a little something.
Yeah, and so he bangs her in the hallway, and it's this very like hot and heavy scene, and then Richard Gere finds it and he freaks out, and I think there's a murder. Anyway, very intense, but it makes me think, like, is that sort of like the story element of these erotic novels, of like there's a lot of like intrigue and
complexity of the character, like why this is happening, what has drawn her to this place and to this person.
See, that stuff makes me so uncomfortable.
Does it?
That movie fucked me up.
Oh, did it?
Like that, it's not a good movie. It's not a great movie. It's not, there's nothing miraculous about it.
Right.
But it stuck with me forever because it made me
feel
so sick.
Was it disturbing?
I was so heartbroken for Richard Gere.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so like, this young, sexy Spanish man. I was like, what are you doing? You can have any woman you want. Why are you
intruding here?
Yeah, stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you fucker.
And you're like, wrecking everything.
That's right. And I hated it. And I think this is why I try to not avoid reading erotic literature, because I'm like,
you don't want it to spoil anything for you.
I don't want there to be a bunch of infidelity everywhere I look.
You've always hated that. Anytime we watch movies with infidelity in it, he's just like, he's like sick to his stomach.
It upsets
fucks me up.
Yes,
I hate it. And there's probably a lot of guilt there. Like, I cheated on a girlfriend once, and fuck, God, it was like, it was like the worst feeling ever, you know. It was like the worst thing I've ever done in my life, I felt like.
Right.
So I feel like there's like a lot of deep-seated kind of like, I don't want to face that part of me.
Well, I mean, I can understand what you mean, because so betrayal, you know, why would we want that mixed with our sex? Right?
Like,
because sex is a really positive thing and betrayal is not.
Well, then danger is
you wouldn't
fun.
Want it to. Well,
I
yeah.
I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, I don't have the same reaction to the infidelity thing, but,
right.
But I do have that reaction to, like, I really don't like scenes of sexual violence.
Mm. Right.
That is, I just hate that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think that there's sexual violence in a movie, I won't watch it.
Right. Oh my God, I just had a flashback of that writing course that I took with you, or that the solo works, where you were like, I choose what images I want in my brain.
Yeah, because you can't get them out.
No.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't unsee.
I know. And it's not that I have to be careful, because that's my preference as, like, for entertainment, you know, for art, that I won't seek that out. But as a workshop leader, or as a coach, as a mentor to writers, I totally make space for them to express in that way. If that's what they, you know, if that's what comes up for them, if that's what they need to write about and want to express and share, then I'm behind them 100%. I advocate for them. I create space for them to do that. It's just
not your preference.
It's not what I like.
Yeah.
For entertainment purposes.
No, and it's not like, it just makes me all cringy, and I don't want to be having sex and have an image like that come up into my mind, right? Like,
for anyone that that comes across something that, like, they want to unsee for life, there's a subreddit called Eye Bleach, and it's just like videos of cute puppies and it's great. It's like, it's a great reset button. So if you see something you just hate, go to subreddit Eye Bleach and
to wash your eyes out.
Just wash your eyes out with some bleach. Yeah.
Really? Does it actually work? Like, can you?
I don't know. I mean, like,
erase something. Like, does it work to erase something?
I think it can work if you want it to. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Last time I went to it, there was like, it was a puppy golden retriever playing with like 500 rubber duckies, and I was just like, this fucking thing is the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life, and I don't even remember what it was that I was trying to erase from my memory.
But I don't want to see that when I'm having sex either. Yeah.
Some people might. There's a lid for every pot. You know?
Well, I know. That's the thing. That's the thing.
So how do you, like, what are some of the tools that you use within your writing workshop to elicit this this exploration into sexual creativity in
that
writing?
That is a really, really good question. Well, the main thing that I do is we start with agreements, and everyone agrees to certain parameters. So the first agreement is confidentiality. Meaning that, so say if the three of us, say if the two of you were in my workshop, and you wrote, you know, your piece and you wrote your piece and, you had this experience with me in the workshop and with the others. When you left the workshop, you could tell someone about your experience, right? You could say, oh, I went to this workshop. It was really cool. We did this and that. I wrote a piece, you know, I really feel like I had a breakthrough. I didn't know that I could, you know, you could talk about your experience, but you wouldn't say, and oh, there was this guy in the workshop mm-hmm. and he or she wrote about this. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about because she works at la la la, you know. So that's the confidentiality.
Is the reason for that because a lot of people when they are creating in terms of like creative writing or what have you, people draw from their own personal experience a lot of the time. So it's like kind of keeping keeping that out of the public eye.
Well, here's what I want to protect. I want to protect the writer's creativity, that first creative impulse. So if you're in my workshop, you will you're guaranteed confidentiality. You can choose later, you know, maybe you revise your work, maybe you choose to share it publicly, have it published or not, but that's your choice, right? So knowing that you have that safety, that it's your choice, gives you permission to go deep and to explore and to write freely.
There's nothing going to hold you back.
You will not censor yourself.
Right.
It's us saying no to our ideas and censoring ourselves that prevents us from writing well. So confidentiality is the first agreement, and another agreement is that reading out loud, sharing is optional. Right. So oftentimes at a writing workshop, at the end of it, everyone's expected to read. Well, again, if you're writing first draft material and you think to yourself, oh my God, at the end of this, I'm going to have to read it out loud in front of everybody, then that is going to inhibit you. So for me, in my workshops, reading is always optional. It gives you that permission to go deep and to write freely, and you choose yourself whether you want to read or not. Usually I've created so much safety in the workshop that people will read, but I want them to know at the very start that
not necessary
is right. Optional. And then the other agreement is no critiquing, which is also quite radical in a writing workshop. Usually there's critiquing. So again, if you think that you're going to be critiqued, when your first draft material is going to be critiqued, it just makes you all tight and closed in and, you know, trying to be perfect and craft perfect sentences. And so I just use free writing, you know, just like write as fast as you possibly can. Keep your hand moving on the page. Don't worry about spelling or grammar. Give yourself permission to write as it comes through you. And you'll be able to tidy it up and revise later if you wish. But the way to get really juicy first draft material
is to vomit it out onto the page.
Okay, I wouldn't use that word, but
Jeremy would. It's just right out of his vocabulary. Yeah, exactly.
But yes, just to let it flow, just to let it, like let yourself be a channel, and the words come through. So those are ways that I create an atmosphere where really good work can be created.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Have you ever? I'm sure you have, but have you ever led a workshop and someone has brought something to the table that's just blown you away?
In terms of the
content that they, you know, what they've come up with, the concept or the idea that they've come up with?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I've been quite in awe of the quality of writing that comes out in first draft. And in fact, 90% of the time I am in awe of the quality of the writing. But again, it's just because it's so uncensored and free. Mm. And the when you allow that kind of freedom, the connections, the segues, the associations that come through in the writing are not ones that you could ever contrive or plan. Mm. And so they're so original and fresh and sharp that that is always, even though I see it happening over and over and over again, it still surprises me. Mm-hmm. And yes, in content, it's funny because the content will often surprise me too. Like, you do not know what's going on
in someone's head.
You don't know. Yeah. You really don't know. Yeah. People can really surprise you. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm often surprised.
I'm curious to know if there's, you know, obviously you're going to have people attending these workshops that are people who have an interest in writing, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, maybe looking for a career in writing, or it's a pastime that they just find a lot of enjoyment within.
Yeah.
But have you heard of anyone taking this workshop almost strictly for the purpose of spicing up their own sex life or having an effect on them and their partner?
Mm-hmm.
Not I feel that any, like it would be a fucking great
I do too.
Thing to do.
Yes, yes. And it's because I know I've done what you kind of described, like creating, writing a scenario. Mm. I've done that myself. And I do think that for people who enjoy writing, that would be a really good avenue, right? Yeah. And it takes the pressure off of them having to verbalize too, mm-hmm. and describe things in words out loud while someone's looking at them and you're trying to, yeah, you right. know, it gives you a chance to right. sort of formulate your scenario and really get it down before you share it. So I think that would be really, I think that that would work well for people who enjoy writing.
Mm.
Do you think of yourself as someone who enjoys writing?
You know, it's funny that you say that because I had just been asked to write an op-ed
yeah.
for a magazine.
Right.
And I was talking to my agent who linked me up with this opportunity. And I was like, man, I don't know if I have it in me. And he said, well, do you like writing?
Mm-hmm.
And initially I wanted to say, no, I hate it. I oh, okay. hate writing.
Right.
But then I thought about it a little bit and I'm like, well, I write these keynote speeches that I do. And I loved writing. And when we were in theater school and creative, like our creative writing class, and then talking to you tonight, I'm realizing I love writing,
uh-huh.
you know, like these long erotic
right.
scenarios.
There you go.
So maybe I do.
Yes.
But it's very, I think, very like specific and streamlined to certain avenues that I like writing.
You're well, such probably. An extrovert as well. And like writing can be such an introverted, lonely process.
It is a lonely thing, yeah.
But it doesn't have to be because you don't have to, you know, like writing an op-ed. I mean, it's not like you have to go and lock yourself in a cabin for 6 months to
right.
write that. Like,
yeah, right.
You can knock that off in a couple of hours here and there, whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you allow yourself to just capture on the page the way that you would talk,
yeah.
then you're golden.
Right.
Right?
Right, yeah.
It's just capturing it on paper.
Yeah, which so is that generally the way I write.
Yeah.
Is like how I talk, right?
And
and I think I censor myself in that when I write it that way, I go, well, that's not correct. That's not like the correct way to write something, you know? And so I get all in my head about it.
Yeah, so you just need to let that go.
Let it go, yeah. For
yeah,
sure.
Let that go. Because
it's a hard one.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, there's so many writing workshops that you can take about finding your voice, and all it is, your writing voice is just the way you would speak,
yeah.
just the way you would talk. So if you are able to just do that, wow, like you are just light years ahead of others. And, you know, I mean, people who have taken a lot of, you know, oh, I don't know, who are professionals, who are academics, who, you know, they have a lot to unlearn when it comes to writing because they've put all these rules on themselves about trying to sound writerly and
structure and grammar. And sentence format.
And using words that might impress others and all that kind of stuff. So if you haven't absorbed that, you're light years ahead and you...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Sign up for those.
Yeah, that feels good. Yeah, that feels good to hear. This was so great. I feel like this was such a like interesting, fun little conversation about
all kinds of things.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you were hoping we would dive into?
I'm not sure. I think we talked about a lot of things. Yeah, we did. And I think that I just want to encourage people to write and to speak their truths. And so again, I commend the two of you for what you're doing. I think that it's a great contribution to the whole conversation. And yeah. So I hope you'll write your op-ed.
I'll keep you posted.
It's funny because yesterday we interviewed Maria and she's a voice teacher and I'm so connected to both voice training and writing and feel like they influence each other so much. Like when I can speak authentically and honestly, then I'm also usually way more in my body and way more like in tune with my own sexuality and sensuality. Ooh. And it just like they feed off of each other. And when I'm feeling tight in my throat and not really free to express myself, I also don't really feel like being very physical. I don't feel very like sexy. I just like, you know, I get introverted and caught up on that stuff. So if I just think that some people out there that haven't had the years of training in theater and in writing and practice of these things might not recognize that so much in themselves, but I hope somebody does hear that and go, oh my God.
Yeah, because it's all your energy, right?
Yeah.
And your creative expression. And it's not possible to be inhibited in one area and not have that affect
the
other aspects of your life. So
nothing in isolation.
Right. Ooh. And if you're pretending or being silent about something that's important to you, like just then it's inhibiting you in other areas, and it's also inhibiting other people who are around you because everyone senses that, right?
Yeah.
So when you, like the two of you having these honest conversations and other people being able to listen in on them, it gives the rest of us permission to speak truthfully, and that just makes the whole world a better place.
Love it. Thank you for saying that.
Well, thanks again, Kathleen.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And thank you all so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another fascinating episode, I'm sure. And in the meantime, head on over to iTunes. Do the same thing we say to do every single fucking week. Subscribe. Leave a rating or review. Tell one friend that you listen to the podcast and that
write
you love it.
Write a sexy, creative, self-expressive comment.
Yeah, send us your erotic writing. Actually,
let's put together a book.
Send us your erotic writing if you have any, and we'll read it on the podcast if you want. We'll make that a little bonus episode.
Yeah.
I fucking love that. Do it. Just do it. I know some of you will.
Check out our booties on Instagram every Sunday and visit us on Facebook or on Twitter or send us an email, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com. You can visit us there, turnmeonpodcast.com, to submit to be a guest or ask us a question.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd love to answer it.
That's it for this week. Until next week.
Go fuck yourself.
mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.